This programme was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi te motu, MPR. If you're enjoying this podcast in Manawatu, you could make your very own, just like this one. MPR exists to help people like you tell your story or share your passion on air and online. Check out mpr.nz for more information.
Welcome to Manawatu Conversations, recollections of the past and sometimes opinions about the future.
Today we have with us Chris Lucy.
And I'm Stuart Burks. So in the last episode you were talking about your experience in Suez, but then you were recalled back to when the Suez Crisis ended. You were recalled back to...
No, we were called back before the Suez Crisis ended.
Oh, you were pulled out before. Okay.
Yeah. So when we left...
Yes.
We actually went through the replenishment fleet that was going into Suez. And I think things like your tankers and your... all those other type things, the non-warship type things.
Yeah, yeah.
Ships that carried the food.
All the supplies.
All the supplies.
Yeah.
And also tugs that were towing lock gates and God knows what else. Yeah.
Were other ships being pulled out at the same time?
No.
No.
Because the other ships were...
So they weren't being rotated, right? No, okay. So what did you get any sense of feeling for, or were you in contact with the other ships at the time?
No.
And what was the feeling on your ship then?
Some people were very pleased. They wanted to get back to New Zealand.
Yeah.
To get back in time for Christmas. Bearing in mind that we had left New Zealand in October 55, and this was now October 56, and it was going to take us 2 months to get back to New Zealand, making a total of 14 months.
Would many of the crew be married with families in New Zealand?
And they were sort of wanting to get home to their families,
etc.
People like me who didn't get homesick or anything, we were wishing we had stayed.
Yeah. Did you feel that you'd actually seen any action then? You've been there in the middle. So what sort of action had you seen or participated in?
Well, the nearly shooting down that American plane. And another evening on our radar, bearing in mind that radar was very, very primitive then. Two blobs were seen on the radar, and it was thought it was probably a couple of Egyptian motor torpedo boats sneaking up on our starboard quarter. That means on the... coming up behind us
on the right hand side
of the quarter deck sort of thing. And it was instantly thought if they fired their torpedoes we would have been hit. And one of the most likely places for the torpedo or a torpedo to have come in was right where my action station was. But anyway, we fired a couple of star shell, and when they burst, because star shell bursts up in the sky and the light goes down, there wasn't anything underneath it. But on the radar, these two blips turned around and disappeared. And one school of thought is that it's probably two flights of flamingos going across the ocean. Personally, I prefer to believe that it was U-boats.
Yes. So what was there much of an Egyptian navy?
No.
No. Okay.
And they're virtually all all ex-Russian Navy rejects sort of thing.
Yeah.
Well, getting back to the Suez Crisis, Israelis were on our side as well.
That's right.
And that they had swept through the Sinai Desert down to the canal and captured an Egyptian frigate. And in the paper that we saw a while later, was a photo of this Egyptian frigate off the coast of Haifa in Israel, with the Egyptian flag flying and the Israeli flag flying above it. And also we saw a photo of part of the Sinai Desert covered in boots, army boots. The Egyptians had taken them off so they could run faster away from the Israelis. Yeah, anyway, we came through the Straits of Gibraltar down to Sierra Leone. I think the last time a New Zealand warship had been in Sierra Leone was probably in the Second World War sometime. But we went there, we were there for a couple of days, and from there down to Simonstown in South Africa. Simonstown being the naval port for Cape Town. And we only went there to refuel, and it was, apartheid was still very strong. We didn't stay there long enough to go on any shore leave. We weren't allowed, and if there had been any shore leave, we weren't going to be allowed anyway.
Yeah. Were there any Maori on the crew?
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, so that would have been a big issue. If you...
Oh, that wasn't the big issue.
No.
The big issue was the fact that the South African sailors, Navy sailors, that were hauling the hoses over to the Royalists to refuel us were all black. And the ones standing at the back giving the orders were all white, regardless of the fact that some of the black South African Navy sailors were two or three ranks above the white ones that were giving the orders.
Sure.
So you can imagine.
It's interesting that they were able to get the higher rank, but then they were still given orders by the whites.
But we were leaning on the guardrails.
Yeah, yeah.
And the abuse that we were shouting to the white South Africans was unbelievable. If we had gone ashore, we would have been locked up in cells in no time at all. And I don't think they had 500 odd cells in Simonstown for our crew.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we saw apartheid.
Yeah.
At what we considered, at its worst.
Shall we jump forward then? Because there was a big issue in 81 with the Stop the Tour and so on. Given your experience back in 56, you would have had an attitude to, or an opinion on that, wouldn't you? Were you in New Zealand in
81? Yeah, but it was different.
Okay.
It was different. That was a sporting type thing.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Entirely different. Yeah, from Simonstown we went across to Port Louis in Mauritius. Very nice place. Very nice indeed. And then across to Fremantle in Western Australia, Hobart, and back into Auckland just in time for Christmas. 14 months away.
So, and your feelings getting back to New Zealand? You'd wished it had carried on longer? Or?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was quite happy.
Yeah. And you got back, so you would have got home for Christmas with family?
Such as it was.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's no real love in my family.
No.
I don't think I heard the word love at all when I was a child.
Yeah, yeah. And you'd left early and formed your own life, really.
Yes. So as far as missing my family, because I was an only child.
Yeah, yeah.
far as myself and my family went. What family?
So in fact you would have found the comradeship of the Navy, of your colleagues there, much, much stronger.
Well, when I first joined the Navy, it was a real shock to the system of being forced to join in with others and get on with them.
Mm-hmm.
And if they did something wrong, you were part of that class, so therefore you were punished as well. The whole class was punished. That sort of thing. I found that hard for a start. And it was the first time I'd, when I joined the Navy, it was the first time I'd ever lived with Marys. So that was...
Did you have any special impression of them? Or you, yeah.
Yeah, I was... When I was a schoolboy, I was told that Marys had sores on their legs, and I hardly saw any Marys until I joined the Navy. Here I am amongst people that have been up in front of the beacon, told either join the Navy or go to Boston.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
And some of my classmates had chosen the Navy. So some of them were real rough.
But you learned to get on with them and became good friends with them.
Yeah, yeah. Some of them became, some of these so-called rough Marys were actually just great big cuddly teddy bears.
Yeah.
In fact, the initials of my older son, he was given the same initials as one of these great big Mary teddy bears.
Yeah.
Mm.
So once you were back in New Zealand, you were home for Christmas, then back on a ship again?
Same ship. And then we did a New Zealand cruise to show the people of New Zealand what their brand new, or so-called brand new warship. Nothing very remarkable happened on that cruise.
Were the public allowed to go on the ship and see it, or was it more that it was moored up somewhere where they could see it from a distance?
Well, when we got back to Auckland, we berthed at the naval base, and the family were allowed onto the wharf. At some stage or other, yes, they were allowed on board. Occasionally there was such a thing as an open day or a family day or something.
Mm-hmm.
And then you were waiting for the next trip overseas, or there's more?
Yeah, a lot of us were going to be posted off to various other ships or shore establishments or for training or whatever.
Hmm.
And I myself was going to be posted to Wakefield, which was the umbrella name for Navy personnel that were posted sort of in the Greater Wellington region mainly.
Okay.
And but being in the communications branch, my job was going to be in the Naval Communications Centre in Wellington. But just beforehand I managed to get myself into real trouble, and I found out what it was like on the other side of the bars.
Mm-hmm.
Where I wasn't allowed to converse with my cell sentry. I wasn't allowed to look out the porthole. I knew the only porthole was and that was way up in the side of the ship. I couldn't.
Oh, so you're on a ship?
Oh, yeah. It was because the Royals had a cell on the ship. And the bed was a wooden bed with a wooden pillow, and I had no shoelaces, no belt. I smoked at the time, and I wasn't allowed to smoke. I wasn't allowed to read. So what else was it? At night I was given a sheet as well, which was taken off me in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And the first thing I had to do when I was woken up in the morning was strip the whole cell out, make sure it was nice and clean. And considering it had been many months since it was last used, the first time I had to scrub it out, it took a bit of work.
So it must have been quite extreme, the reason you were put in there, if it's hardly ever used.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, I was under...
You don't have to go over details.
No, I'm not going to.
No.
But I was put in there mainly for my own safety, for a start.
Okay.
Because I'll tell you now that alcohol had a huge...
Okay. Yeah.
...lot to do with it. And then I was put on the officer of the day's report, and I felt so ill that I could not stand to attention in front of him. Mm. I had to lean against the bulkhead, and once I had to rush out and have a chunder over the side of the guardrails,
uh-huh,
and back again. And then he put me onto the commander's report, which meant that, okay, I was then allowed to go ashore if I wanted to. But I felt so ill that there's no way that I could possibly go ashore. And the commander's report was the following day. And then he put me up to the captain's report, which was a few days later. And getting put onto the captain's report firstly meant you were under open arrest. So you're very confined as to where you could go, what you could do and everything else. And then the captain asked me all about what I'd done, and I made up some real cock and bull story that was obviously not correct.
Yeah.
But I managed to make it up in such a way that they couldn't prove me wrong. So the captain decided to put me on remand.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. In other words, under close arrest.
Yeah.
So back into the cell we went until they decided that it was time that they dealt with me. And they got me out of the cell on the very day that I was supposed to be going down to Wellington to go to Wellington, to Wakefield. And all the captain said was, "Have you changed your story?" And I said, "No, sir." And because they couldn't disprove my story one way or the other,
yeah,
he then gave me my punishment. I virtually got away with this. Mm-hmm. I was expecting to go to the Services Corrective Establishment in Ardmore, which was rumoured at the time to be the toughest prison in New Zealand. And it was only for service personnel, Army, Navy and Air. But it was a real tough place. Very few people ever went back there for a second stint.
Mm.
But at that time, if you were sentenced to 28 days there, it meant that you remained in the Navy.
Yeah.
If you were sentenced to 29 days there, it meant that on the 29th day, you were going to be dishonorably discharged on your way.
Mm-hmm. So how long were you in the... Was it called the cells on the ship?
But all told.
Yeah.
Or under...
In that one, if there are other incidents, I don't know, but
that time when I was put in cells initially for my own good, for my own safety, that was 2 days. And 2 days, I think it was 2 days. And the time that I was under close arrest was 3 days, so that's five or 6 days all told.
But enough of a shock effect for you to modify your behaviour?
I'll tell you what, you go into cells, and you have your belt taken off you, you have your shoelaces taken off you, etc., etc. Your mindset changes immediately. You have a totally different mindset altogether. You just don't care about anything.
So it wasn't a corrective shock for you then, you mean? Or?
No.
No, okay.
No, it wasn't.
No, okay.
Except for one thing. It was several years before I drank whiskey again.
Yeah, okay.
But any other form of alcohol, except for gin, I've never drunk gin, I've never liked it at all.
Mm.
But except for gin, I still carried on drinking alcohol.
Mm. Okay.
And that included what the what was in the paint locker on the ship, because there was a naval seaman put in charge of the paint locker. And the paint locker was always near the communications mystery.
Yeah.
And some of the mixtures that the painter mixed up were weird and wonderful.
Are those the meths, Turks? That's...
Oh, that was mould.
That's mould, okay.
Well, you want to try Brasso. Brasso.
I don't know if we should be broadcasting this.
Without anything in it.
Yeah. Oh, boy, that sounds a bit on the rough side. Yeah. So you went down to Wellington?
Yep. And I was put on the Air Force barracks at Shelley Bay. Mm. That was used mainly as a barracks for soldiers and airmen and sailors that worked at different parts of Wellington. And I didn't spend long there. I went and boarded out in Nainai in Lower Hutt. Mm-hmm. And I was on shift work all the time. But I was walking around the shopping centre in Nainai one day, and a voice said to me, "What are you doing here?" I turned around and took one look and said, "And what are you doing here?" It was another sailor, same trade as I was, who had joined in the same year, but at the end of the year. I joined at the beginning. He joined about middle of the year. And I said, I'm just boarding up the road. And he said, "Hey." He says, "Well, I come from just up the road, different street." I said, "What are you doing tonight?" And I said, "No, I'm not on watch or anything. I'm not on watch until tomorrow." He said, "Well, come up for a beer tonight." So I went up to his place, walked in, and here was a lounge full of children, various ages, and their father. Their father, incidentally, was a corporal in the army.
Mm-hmm.
But and I met all these other siblings, except for one. And eventually walked this young girl, which she doesn't look too bad. Turned out that she worked in an insurance company in Wellington that was just down the road from where the Naval Communications Centre was. And at that time, I always took my car into Wellington and parked it outside the Defence Headquarters place, because parking was, plenty of parking most days. And this girl knocked off work about the same time as I did when I was on the day shift. So on those days, I would pick her up from her work and take her home. It wasn't long after that we were engaged. We had our engagement party. But by that time, the Navy had sent me up to Auckland onto a fishery protection motor launch. HMNZS Marco. It's a 72-foot motor launch, crew of 9. And we were based mainly in the Bay of Islands at the time, because it was coming up towards Waitangi Day. And the Governor General at the time, Lord Cobham, and his wife and family were up there on holiday, and we had the job of taking them out fishing each day that they wanted to go out fishing. They had never been line fishing before, so we had to teach them how to bait a hook and put it over the side. And every time they pulled the line up and the bait was taken, we had to re-bait the hook. But the first time we left Russell Wharf, I was having a radio schedule with the Navy in Auckland, and I came up out of the hatchway. I got up on the upper deck, just as Lady Cobham had hauled in her first snapper. It came over the side and it jumped off the hook, and I was near a sailor knot.
But it
slipped through my fingers and over the side. And she just turned around and looked at me. "You're fired."
What is...
You know, very upper crust, posh English accent.
Yeah.
"You're fired." Yes. I tried to keep out of her way for the remainder of the day.
So that was a joke, I think.
But the next day we went out. Somebody had made up this nice plate of sandwiches with lettuce leaves all the way around. And I was asked to take it up. So I went up out of the hatch with this nice plate of sandwiches, just got up.
Thank you for listening to Manawatu Conversations. This and other recent programs can also be found on the Manawatu People's Radio website. And a range of programs is also available.
Thank you for listening. Tune in next time for another episode.
The address for that is manawatuheritage.pncc.govt.nz.
If you enjoy this NPR podcast, please consider subscribing. Our podcasts are available on all major podcasting platforms: Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, as well as the accessmedia.nz app. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.npr.nz/donate.